is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Travis Schwab, head men's basketball coach at Muskingum University, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Hey, Hoopheads, we all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com, spelled A-R-Y-S-E, and use the code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off the future of performance. That's A-R-Y-S-E.com with promo code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off. Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Clinton here without my co-host, Jason Sunkel, but I am pleased to welcome back to the podcast for the first time in a long time, Matt Maurer from the Draft Review. Matt, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Man, we are excited to have you on tonight and talk a little NBA draft. It has been obviously a very, very strange 6 to 8 months for the NBA. I don't think anyone still really has a grip on what's happening and what is about to happen as we head into the draft and free agency and the lifting of the trade moratorium. So it should be a very interesting month of November, to say the least. So let's dive right in on the draft. In your mock draft, you have Anthony Edwards of the University of Georgia going number one to the Timberwolves. Why Edwards? Fit, talent, what is it about Edwards that makes him stand out above everybody else in this draft?
For me, Anthony Edwards represents, I think, the best possible outcome for the Minnesota Timberwolves. He has a lot to give in terms of athleticism, ability to score. But I think the bigger, if there's a bonus, the biggest part is he still has so much room left to develop. There were a few times during this year he looked a little out of place at times, wasn't fully engaged in the game. So those are things that usually affect younger guys. So he's still – we haven't seen the best of him yet, and I just really like him.
Do you worry at all about – I think one of the things that when I hear about a guy as a fan who they say, well, he kind of floats in and out, and he's not always there, and he's not always given 110%, that's a kind of guy that even though he obviously has a tremendous amount of talent, he's probably – from anybody in this draft, he's clearly probably the best guy as a potential scorer moving forward. But when I hear guys that just they question their motor, that makes me a little bit nervous. So tell me something, if I'm a Minnesota fan, it's going to make me feel better about the fact that maybe he's taking some plays off or some games off. Is it just the fact that he's young? Is that the biggest argument in favor of him?
Yeah, I think that he's young. And I think more importantly, I think he's still in a period of adjustment. I think for incoming freshmen, there's this, some of them come in and they automatically conquer. And some guys don't want to override and be domineering to their teammates. And sometimes that's a little bit of a feeling out process for a lot of freshmen. But I think with Anthony Edwards, it's not about will. Like, he's a very competitive guy. He gets very locked in. It's just about, does he have that motor? Can he train that motor to be constant through a complete game? And really, I think that's a process of youth, not a process of dedication, for example. Like, he has that.
Understood. All right. So how does he fit with D'Angelo Russell and Karl Anthony Towns? Those two guys, clearly from an offensive standpoint, are two of the better players in the league. Karl Anthony Towns might have the best and most diverse ability to score of any big man in the entire league. But I think the question with the Timberwolves is, defensively, what do they have? What do they need in order to surround those guys with the type of players that are going to allow them to have success? Because obviously, other than the three quarters of the season when Jimmy Butler was there in Minnesota, Towns hasn't had a whole lot of success winning basketball games. So how does Edwards impact them playing alongside D'Angelo in the backcourt? How do you see those two fitting together? And then just, what does Edwards bring to the table that maybe fills in some gaps potentially if he reaches his highest ceiling? What does he fill in potentially for the two guys that are already there?
I think what he fills in is he's a great – well, at times he can be a very electric shooter. And when he gets going, he doesn't always need the ball to get going. And that's always a plus, especially when you're dealing with a guy like D'Lo, who really likes to have the ball in his hands. Anthony's not one of those guys where he's like James Harden or some of these other guys where he has to get going. He can catch and shoot with the best of them. And I just think he really fits in with what they want, which is a culture of being a little bit more dedicated. Again, like I said, he has a competitive streak in him, something that they really struggled to get Andrew Wiggins going with. Wiggins would just come in there and pretty much was disengaged for most of his career. And I think that was always the problem with Andrew Wiggins that I don't think is a problem with Anthony Edwards.
Yeah, I'm sure if you're a Wolves fan, that's something that you want to hear. You want to pick a guy who, if you bring him into your program, he's going to be in the gym working to improve and get better and fit in. And I think clearly you look at his athleticism and his ability to score and just his body at age 19, the things that he should be able to do if he develops and has a great work ethic over the course of his career, he certainly should be able to be a good defensive player just with his body and his athleticism. So if that ends up being the case and you get the dynamic scoring that you've been describing, then that should be a really good fit for Minnesota. Any feel for whether you think Minnesota is going to maybe trade out of that pick? Have you heard anything? What's your speculation? Do you think they will? Do you think they won't? Where do you stand on Minnesota trading out of that number one spot?
I think with this, and I just did a video on Facebook about this. This is probably the most disingenuous time for NBA teams. They're going to tell you everything you want to hear and none of what you need to hear. And right now they all are working out guys and they love all the guys they work out. And, you know, everybody, you know, I'm hearing Anthony Edwards, LaMelo Ball, Wiseman, Okongwu, Denny Avdija. Any of them could be number one or number two right now, because that's supposedly they're working out everybody and they love them all. And the truth of the matter is these teams are all in the information gathering process. And at some point, the teams are going to have to sit there and say, okay, do we like who we – at number one, do we like what we're getting, or is the guy that we really like down a couple more picks? Maybe we can trade out of this number one, get some more veteran help, and still get the guy that we want.
All right, so clearly that applies to Golden State at number two, because absolutely, with Steph coming back and with Klay coming back and – Draymond still in the fold, that team has title aspirations for next year. So it's highly unlikely that no matter who they pick, even if the guy that they pick ends up being the best rookie in this class and ends up being the best player for his career in this class, that guy's probably still a year or two away, 3 years away from making an impact on a championship level team. So if you're Golden State and you're looking at this pick, what's your, not even, I know you have them taking LaMelo at number two. We could talk a little bit more about LaMelo here in a second, but just thinking about the Warriors, what is their, what's the philosophy that they stay there with the pick? Are they looking to find somebody that can fit in and maybe play a role in their championship team? Or are they looking for a guy who potentially 2-3 years from now, as Steph and Clay start to age out, can maybe take the mantle of becoming the best player on that team? I think LaMelo probably fits. I mean, I guess he could probably fit into both of those categories with his passing and depending on what he does on the defensive end of the floor. So just talk a little bit about what Golden State is looking to do and then why you have LaMelo going to them at number two.
I have a lot of times with my mock draft, sometimes I go by what I really believe in a prospect, and sometimes I go with what I think teams will take.
Understood. So which one is this? Which one is this?
So LaMelo is who I think they'll take. It's not who I agree with him taking. If I was Golden State, I would probably take James Wiseman. He's a guy that does everything that you like in a modern big man. Is still developing his skill set, has a lot of that modern face-up, good footwork, good balance, solid athlete. It's just a very hard position to get really good guys at that level. And I think he would help them in a championship capacity, and I think he would help them in the future. It's no secret. Golden State for years has been trying to get centers to replace Andrew Bogut. They drafted Damian Jones from Vanderbilt a couple years ago at the end of the first round. They had Festus
Zeli.
Yes, they had him. So they've been trying to get centers left and right, and I think this is a guy that would fit a need, and I do believe in his value and what he can bring to them in the future. So if I was them, I would take Wiseman.
All right, so why do you think they're going to take LaMelo? I've heard, and just from listening to things and reading things over the last week or so, it seems like I've heard two completely distinct stories about LaMelo. I've heard one that he's falling. He's been a terrible interview. So that's one camp. And then the other camp is he's clearly the best player and he's going to go number one to Minnesota. So I've heard either he's dropping like almost to the back end, maybe, towards the picks 8, 9, 10, or he's going to definitely go number one. So just tell me a little bit about LaMelo. What's your take on what kind of pro you think he's going to be, and then why you think Golden State is going to take him at two?
I'm not a fan of LaMelo. I'm one of the few draft guys that is not a fan. I wasn't a fan of his brother coming out. I actually had De'Aaron Fox rated much higher than Alonzo Ball. I think LaMelo Ball is going to be better than his older brother, but at the same time, there are things about LaMelo I don't like. I don't like his body. I don't like his athleticism. He's still a very inconsistent three-point shooter. These are all things that could really hamper him. And I mean, I think much of his passing ability and other things, look, I give the kid all the credit in the world. He's developed himself beyond what I even thought he could be. When I first saw him at Chino Hills and then when he went to Lithuania, he's done a complete 180 as a prospect. I mean, no doubt about that. But this narrative that he's the best prospect in the draft, I don't buy it. And if people really believe that, then that I think I'd be worried if I was an NBA team if people really believe that, because that lets me know that this is probably a weak draft. And I just don't see what everybody else sees. I think he's a good player. I think he'll be a solid pro, a quality starter perhaps. But this narrative that he's the best player in the draft, I just don't see it.
I think everybody's basing that on the fact that he's a very, very good passer. And clearly passing is a skill. You look at a guy like LeBron, or you look at a guy like Luka, or even Trae Young, who are kind of transcendent passers, and the impact that can have on a modern day NBA offense. And the people that you hear having him that highly rated, I think sort of tend to push him towards, maybe not to that completely elite level like LeBron and Luka, but certainly feel like he's going to walk into the NBA on day one and be one of the better passers in the league. And yet, for me, I still go back to so much of what I'd want to do with a player, or what would be important to me beyond their skill level, would just be, what do they bring? What are the intangibles that they bring off the floor? And you just look at LaMelo's backstory. And of course, we all know LaVar has been a lot more quiet than he was with Lonzo, but he's still there. And you have just all the, I mean, you mentioned a couple of the places that he's played, and he's been all over the place. And you start thinking about a guy who, when you're talking about a top three draft pick, you're talking about a guy that eventually you'd like to be able to build your franchise around and sort of be able to build your culture around that guy that you're picking that high in the draft. And with his background, I just don't know that he has that type of mentality where he's going to be able to, and again, he's not going to do it at age 19 anyway, but that's why I do think that if you look at these teams at the top half of the draft, I think any of these guys at the top would be lucky to go to Golden State and be able to get into that environment. I think if you could run a simulation and put each of them in Golden State and then put each of them somewhere else, I think the results of their career and what they ended up doing would probably be a lot better if they ended up with the Warriors than if they end up in one of these other places up in the top five, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, and I always tell people who tell me he's the best point guard prospect, I always tell them, how certain are you? Because Killian Hayes, for example, who I have going seventh to Detroit, I think is either near or pretty darn close to LaMelo Ball as a point guard prospect. So I don't even think LaMelo Ball is separated himself that much from the other point guards in this draft class.
Yeah. I mean, I think both of those guys have really good size, obviously, for point guards. And so when you start looking at the modern NBA and the ability to switch and play against the pick and roll, I think you want to have guards with size. So maybe even we could talk about this with Edwards too. When you lump Edwards Ball and Killian Hayes in there as guys in the backcourt, maybe they're not great defensive players right out of the gate, but they're not 6'1 dudes trying to get in there and mix it up with guys who are playing power forward or coming off screens or the bigger wings like LeBron and Kawhi. They at least have some size that they can throw out there to be able to work and defend against the players that they're going to have to guard in the pick and roll in the NBA. So I think, like you said, LaMelo is a very polarizing prospect from everything that I've read, and I'll be interested to see how he does, what he does, and ultimately where he ends up going. He's a guy that, for me as a Cleveland fan, I hope LaMelo Ball is not there. he's a guy when I look at it, just the things that I've read, like, he probably scares me more than just about anybody else in the top 10. And not to say that he couldn't turn out to be great, but just the things that I've read of anybody in this top 10, he's the guy that I would probably least like to get, simply because I think his variance of what he could be versus what he ends up being, I think there's a huge gap there. There's a huge range of what he could end up being. So let's move to number three, where Charlotte, you have them taking Wiseman. It seems pretty clear that they want to draft a big man. And if for some reason Wiseman goes in the top two, I'm guessing that they would probably take a Kongwu, correct?
Yeah, I definitely would take, if I was them, I would take that.
All right. So tell us a little bit about a Kongwu compared to Wiseman. Obviously not quite as big, maybe a little bit more switchable because of his size and versatility defensively, but just talk a little bit about the compare and contrast those two prospects.
Yeah, Kongwu is more built in your classic power forward body. I wouldn't say he's as versatile offensively, at least not yet, as Wiseman is, but definitely solidly built, great. I think he's more athletic than Wiseman. From that comparison, he's definitely got Wiseman in the athleticism department. I think right now he's a better shot blocker than Wiseman. Definitely better at help defense. And I would say probably a much better rebounder in terms of fighting for boards than Wiseman. Wiseman's more of a guy that he uses length to get rebounds, and Okongwu uses his his athleticism to get rebounds. And I think in that aspect, you know, Wiseman hasn't beat offensively, and I think Okongwu has Wiseman beat athletically and defensively. So it's going to be interesting to definitely see how these two careers go. It kind of reminds you of the Drummond Embiid, you know, comparison where, you know, you got one guy who was a incredible rebounder and the other guy is an incredible offensive player. So it's definitely going to be interesting to see how these two turn out.
Why Okongwu to Chicago? What about Chicago's roster makes Okongwu a good fit? Because I look at that and I say, okay, they got
Markkanen.
No, I still can. Can you still hear me?
Yeah. You hear me?
Good. Yeah, okay. I can still hear you. Cool. All right, good. So I was just asking about Chicago, the fit in Chicago with you already have Wendell Carter, you have Markkanen, and then your backcourt is Zach LaVine and Kobe White, two guys who are probably, I guess, would be considered shoot first guards, to put it politely. So is Chicago maybe – would Chicago be in the market? I'm thinking – we talked about Killian Hayes as a point guard prospect. Would they consider Killian Hayes at this spot? Why Okongwu and not one of the other guards like Killian Hayes or Halliburton?
Even? I put Okongwu because I believe in following BPA, best player available. You know, often I think in NBA history, you know, teams that go for need and don't go for talent have always regretted that. And, you know, for me, you know, I just think if you can get the guy that you think is the best player available, you should always take him regardless of what else you have on your team, because having too much talent is never a bad thing, and having no talent is a horrible thing. So I always say just go with the best player available, and that's why I have Okongwu going where he is. I don't really believe in going for team needs when you're in the draft. I think, you know, each guy is a lottery ticket, essentially. And you want to aim for the best prize that you think is valued at. And if Okongwu to the Chicago Bulls is their fourth rated prospect, then they should really go for it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think, like you said, you look back over the history of the draft, and clearly what you're trying to do is find those great players. And if nothing else, even if you end up with some positional overlap as you start building your roster, with the way that the league works now and all the trades that are out there and free agents and things that go on, by building up that treasure trove of assets, it just makes it more possible for you to eventually land somebody else that you're really looking to do with those assets that you collect in the draft. So I think you're 100% spot on that. I wouldn't worry too much about position, but I was just curious from Chicago's roster, because like I said, with two shoot first guards in the backcourt, you wonder, would they benefit from trying to add somebody who maybe was a little bit more pass first as opposed to shoot first like LaVine and Kobe White? All right, let's move on to the Cavs. So you have them taking Obi Toppin. I've heard a lot of things from scouts basically that offensively, that if he goes to the right team, that he could very easily be the rookie of the year and put up some big offensive numbers. The concern seems to be at the other end of the floor defensively, that he's kind of got a high center of gravity, that he doesn't move real well, he's kind of stiff and upright, and that he's always going to struggle on the defensive end of the floor. And yet you watch him play on the offensive end of the floor, and the guy is super athletic. So it just seems like if a team could get him into their program and work with him, and if he's a hardworking guy, and everything that I've heard and read is that he's a high character guy who's going to work, it seems like you might be able to turn him into somebody who's at least serviceable defensively. And if you're getting the offense that we've described and that he put up when he was at Dayton, it seems like you're getting a pretty good player. So give me your take on Obi Toppin.
Yeah, I share the same criticisms of him. But, you know, the one thing that Obi hasn't really benefited from, because he's been in college and he was essentially unheralded, he hasn't received, you know, great stretching, hasn't been in yoga. You know, there's a lot of things you can do as an athlete to limber yourself up and get yourself into a more flexible area. And some guys, to your point, some guys, they have these unique body builds and they still somehow make it work. So, you know, that's the thing, like is, and that's the $1 million question really is, does he have a unique body type that we just aren't used to and that he'll go into the NBA and he'll be just fine? Or is his body type going to be something that's going to hinder him at the next level? We honestly don't know. So we don't know if he can improve it by, like I said, doing yoga, calisthenics, core work, or is this something that is just unique to him? And, you know, a lot of people, just to you know, bring it back in terms of draft history, there are a lot of people that were talking about Yao Ming having short arms, and they're worried about, hey, you know, he's 7'6", he has short arms, is that going to hinder him? And it didn't. It was just unique body type to him. And, you know, Elton Brand had the short neck. So, you know, there are people that were saying, oh, you know, even though he's 6'8", he doesn't have the height. And so there's things, you know, that are unique to players. And with Obi, you just have to figure out, is what he has unique, or is it something that he can improve on, or is it something when he goes in, he's going to take off and everything's going to be fine.
Do you have any doubts about him offensively?
I have none. I really don't. Everything he showed me at Dayton, again, you know, he's a prospect like any other guy. I mean, there's always things he can work on in terms of shooting a little better, creating off the dribble a little bit better. Sure, those things he can work on and improve on and get with a trainer. But for the most part, I was impressed with what he did. I mean, he was amazing at Dayton. And I think if Cleveland can get him at fifth, I honestly think if he didn't have some of these body questions, I don't know if he would even be available at fifth in a normal draft year. He might even be a top three prospect if some of these concerns weren't there. So I actually think if he is at fifth, I think it's a very fortunate spot for whoever takes him.
All right. So thinking from a Cavs perspective, if one of those, let's just say, who would the Cavs hope out of that top four would fall to them at five that they would take over Toppin? Is there any of those four guys that if one of those four guys was sitting there that you think, and again, not thinking about necessarily who your top players are available, but thinking from the Cavs perspective, who would they like to see fall to that spot that they'd like to pick out of those top four or five?
I could see them maybe really fighting the urge to take a Wiseman, obviously Anthony Edwards. I think if LaMelo Ball was there, I honestly don't think they would take him. I just think with Anthony Edwards, he's just such a dynamic scorer. You just would love to see if this translates to the next level. Wiseman, again, they haven't had a bona fide big man in Cleveland for a little while. I mean, there's some mileage up on some of the guys they have there now. So, you know, definitely a youth movement in that front court would be great for them. Maybe a Okongwu, depending on, you know, their feelings about some of the guys they have on their team.
Do you want to score more? Training with the Shoticle is the easiest way to score more. The game is changing, and data scientists are determining the best ways to score. Millions of computer simulations determine where to hit the backboard for the highest percentage shots and when it's best to use the backboard. The Shoticle provides those highest percentage shots. From beginners to next-level athletes, the Shoticle is helping players increase their shooting percentages. Visit Shoticle.com now and start scoring more.
I think that the real guy that is the next guy on the mock, that's a guy that they're going to weigh and measure a lot in terms of for Obi, which is Denny Avdija.
Yeah. So what do you like about him? Everything that I read and have seen just from looking at him on tape, it looks like what he's doing is he's a great playmaker, a really good passer, high basketball IQ. I think the shooting is what has everybody a little bit concerned about what he does at this next level in the NBA. So tell us about Avdija, what you like about him.
I like a lot of what you said. I mean, he definitely knows how to play. He really took off when Amari Caspi, who used to be in the NBA,
yep,
got injured. He really took off. The one thing that people don't, I think people give him too much credit on is his athleticism. There's a lot of talk, oh, he's really athletic. And I think in Europe, he is athletic, but in the NBA, he's not going to be able to finish the way he does in the EuroLeague and other competitions where, you know, he's one of the more quicker, faster guys. He'll definitely have to learn how to get off in the lane in the NBA. So I do have some concerns with that. Shooting, you know, it's so unusual when you have that problem with a foreign prospect. It's almost funny when you talk about it because usually we associate shooting with being an American problem. But, you know, like with Ben Simmons and, you know, other guys, you're like, oh, yeah, their jump shot needs work. Or Colin Sexton, when he was coming out of Alabama, there was talk about his shooting. So it's really rare when you deal with a guy that's from overseas, that's a top 10 pick. And one of the blights are, you know, his shooting from the outside. He's got a good looking shot though, and the mechanics aren't bad. So I it looks fixable, and it looks like something that he can add more consistency to for sure.
Yeah, I think that's something that when you start talking about, and we talked about a little bit with Toppin, or you're thinking about someone improving their shot, when you forget or you don't always often think about the number of specialists that NBA teams employ today to be able to work on these different issues and problems that prospects have, whether it's their conditioning, whether it's nutrition, whether it's some specific skill set and the player development side of things. And I think today, for the most part, and again, that's not to say that there aren't still dysfunctional franchises, because we all know that there are, but for the most part, these guys who are rookies today compared to what rookies were walking into 20 years ago, they're walking into so much better situations in terms of the coaching and the surrounding personnel that they have supporting them and trying to develop them, which makes a ton of sense with the amount of money that these teams are investing into these guys. So let's stop for a second here and talk trades. Is there anything that you see? Do you think there's going to be any trades? There's obviously been a lot of talk about teams trying to either move down or conversely move up in the draft to target certain players, or to think that, hey, we like a guy who maybe somebody else has rated a little bit lower that we think we can get at two or three spots down. Do you think anything is going to happen on the trade front, if you had to guess?
Oh, yeah, for sure. There's going to be a bevy of trades, because this year's draft has really affected scouting, has really affected, I think, teams' abilities to lean on combines and workouts. And I think there's going to be some teams, and as a matter of fact, I know, because we know this happens to teams when everything's fine. There's going to be some teams that are really going to mess the draft up. They're not going to do well. I can tell you this right now. There's at least two or three teams that are going to really bomb on this draft. And it's going to show whoever didn't put in the most work before COVID, everybody else played catch up and went on synergy and try to look at the games and all this other stuff. And some of these guys, I'm telling you right now, some of these guys did not do their work. And some of these teams, I would not shock me if you see anywhere between 8 to 10 trades on draft night.
Holy cow. So if it was you, would you be more inclined to trade up because there's somebody that you really like and maybe you think is better than what the consensus is? Or if you were running a team, would you be more likely to say, you know, none of these guys, even the guys I like the most, are a sure thing? If I could trade down two or three spots and get somebody who I think is on the same tier talent-wise, but maybe pick up a veteran asset or another draft pick, which direction would you tend to go? Is there somebody that you really love that you're like, man, if I could move up and get that guy, that's what I would do? Or would you tend to go with the trade back and think, I can get somebody else because everybody's kind of on the same tier?
Yeah, I have a formula that I do with the draft. I already talked about BPA, but yep, for me, I go into every draft DC plus BPA. And DC is draft capital. How much draft capital am I going to have in order to A, get the player that I want, and B, can I take advantage of the market? And I'll give you a prime example. A lot of people were upset with me last year when I ripped Phoenix over their draft pick of Cameron Johnson. And it's not that I thought Cameron Johnson was a bad pick, but he was slated by most people to be a late first round guy. So Phoenix grabbed him at 11th. And what I'm saying is, if Phoenix believed at the time that he was the 11th best player, okay, so their scout said, look, this is the best guy on the board left. Okay, trust your scouts, go with your pick. But I'm saying take advantage of the market. If the market is looking at Cameron Johnson and saying he's a late first round draft pick, trade down, trade that 11th pick to the 15th pick and take Cameron Johnson. Don't pick him at 11th and then you leave all that money on the table where you could help your team. You can get cash considerations. You can get past draft rights to players that they don't want anymore. Luxury tax help with older players that are on your team that are just sucking up your draft, I mean, your cap. So there's all sorts of things you can do and take advantage of the market. And I think a lot of teams sometimes they say the hell with the market, and it really messes them up because, yeah, you might have got your guy, but now if your guy doesn't hit at all, you have nothing to show for it. So if Cameron Johnson isn't the 11th best player on the board, then they've wasted this draft capital that they had and that they could have took him later.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think sometimes teams get caught up, and understandably, they fall in love with a particular player. I kind of equate it to people going out house shopping, and you go and you see a house and you know it's overpriced, but you walk in and you fall in love with that house. You're like, I got to have it at any cost. And I think that sometimes front offices and GMs kind of get caught up in that same thing, that a player wows them, whether it's on tape or in person or with workouts. We know we can think back to Ejon Lan, the chairman of the boards, and his legendary workout beating up the chairs that caused him to go in the top 10. You know, you think about things like that where, you know, it was clear that this guy, based on everything else up leading up into this workout, probably shouldn't have gone that high. And yet somebody falls in love with him. And then all of a sudden, boom, like you said, teams make mistakes. So I think that's entirely possible. And you've seen it work in a positive way. You think about the Celtics trading back and still being able to pick Tatum, who they probably would have picked number one anyway. And then what that did to the Sixers, and with the problems that Markel Fultz has had in the league since he's been in, and he's at least making a nice comeback to be hopefully a functional NBA player for the rest of his career, but certainly not what people thought he was going to be coming into the draft. And as we all know, it is a very, very inexact science, especially as the draft continues to get younger and younger. In another year or two, we're going to be back to drafting guys straight out of high school. The one and done rule probably is going to go away. And that makes it even more difficult when you've never seen these guys play against anybody except high school players. So, and this year, you think about James Wiseman only played 3 games in college. So there's not a whole lot to go on. So, all right, let's jump back into the draft. We already talked about Killian Hayes, who you have going to 7 to Detroit. The next two guys, Isaac Okoro and Tyrese Haliburton, are two guys that, from what I've read, from what I've seen, they're two guys that I kind of like, that I wouldn't mind seeing either one of those guys end up with the Cavs. Because when I think of the Cavs, I think of Darius Garland and Colin Sexton. And I know Sexton had just a terrific second, you can't call it a whole half of the season, but he certainly turned it on towards the end of the season. Every report that's coming out of here in Cleveland is that Sexton is primed to have a really good year, and that he's worked on his body and is committed to being a better defender, which he obviously hasn't been to this point in his career. But with Garland and Sexton in the backcourt, kind of like what you talked about earlier with taking the best player available, and I think that's what the Cavs did last year with Garland. But now you have this small backcourt, and you think about Okoro, his reputation is as a really good defensive player, but maybe a shaky jumper. And then you think Haliburton, who's kind of that all-around glue guy type of player, but again, has good size in the backcourt and can play defense. So talk a little bit about Okoro, Haliburton, which one you like better and why.
I like Okoro better. I think there's a lot more left to work with. You know, people hate when you make these statements and you say that, okay, a kid that's 20 years old doesn't have potential. That's not what I'm saying. I kind of look at players from a different perspective than most people. I mean, certainly You can be an older player and develop into a superstar, but the odds are stacked against you. They just are. And a lot of times you have to take into account athleticism, body type. There's a whole gambit of things you can look at to kind of help you gauge somebody's potential. And I think Okoro, for example, is a guy that just he's not even close to his ceiling. I mean, it's pretty incredible, honestly. I mean, he's got so much left. I mean, his body is he's got a great body. He's great athletically. You can always teach a guy to be a better jump shooter. But, I mean, how many guys can you teach in this day and age of no hand checks? Can you teach a guy to be a potential great defensive player on the perimeter? I think that's really where his big value comes in. I mean, this guy projects to be a very good defensive player. And that's so hard to get in today's NBA climate. And that's why I really, really like him. I wouldn't be shocked if he actually goes top five, just because there's just so much there that you can build on as a team.
Yeah, there's a lot that I like about him. And to be honest, if I was picking and looking at that pick for the Cavs, I kind of am rooting for Okoro to be the pick, as much as Toppin's an Ohio guy and played at Dayton and the offensive upside that he has. But I just think that this team, as you look forward, if Colin Sexton is going to be a guy that you're going to build around, you're going to need somebody with him that's going to be able to be a rugged physical defender that's going to be able to switch across multiple positions. And it seems like Okoro could be that guy. So I'm kind of hoping that that's who the Cavs end up taking at five, but it'll be interesting to see whether or not they can pass on Toppin if he's sitting there, because clearly what his offensive upside, Toppin I'm talking about, is going to be really good. He's going to be good right out of the gate, and he's going to do well on the things that the average fan is going to notice, because he's going to score, he's going to catch lobs, he's going to dunk, he's going to be able to be a versatile offensive player, whereas Okoro, I think, is going to be maybe less flashy from an offensive standpoint, but might have a bigger impact ultimately on winning. So that's kind of why I'm leaning towards Okoro for the Cavs at five, but we'll see.
No, I totally agree with you. And I think that's the thing about him that attracts so many NBA teams, is that he does have those box scores where it doesn't look like it's crazy, but when you start looking into the metrics and everything else that he brings, the hidden value, you start to say to yourself, man, I love this kid. And yeah. I think he's just going to climb.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what he ends up becoming, because as you said, he's got a lot of untapped potential. I'd love to see him try to tap into that potential here in Cleveland. Let's move to the two small forwards, wings from Florida State, Vassell and Patrick Williams. Which one of those two guys do you personally like better? Which one do you think has the bigger long-term upside? Obviously, you have Vassell going number 10 to Phoenix, and then Patrick Williams to New Orleans at number 13, but just talk a little bit about compare and contrast those two guys.
Yeah, Vassell, he's just a brilliant jump shooter right now. He's not really great right now at being a catch and shoot guy, but man, he's really good. He's got a pretty shot, solid defensively. There's just a lot there to build. Very smooth, and he doesn't, athletically, he doesn't jump off the, out of the gym, but he's such a smooth athlete. It doesn't even look like he's trying when he does play. Reminds I'm not saying that's who he is, but he kind of reminds you athletically of like a Ray Allen, where it's just very smooth and doesn't blow up anywhere. But there are plays where you're like, oh, wow, he got up. Patrick Williams, I'm not a big fan of Patrick Williams. He's a guy that I really wish would have went back to school, and that's rare for me to say that about a player. There's so much there about Patrick Williams that, he's another guy. He's another build guy where he has all the tangibles that you like to see in a prospect, but he looked absolutely lost at times on the college game. I mean, there were times where you saw him play where, you know, you could clearly see the game was moving so fast and he was really struggling to keep up. And there were times he just zoned out. And he's still trying to figure out his game, too. He's still trying to figure out what he's good at and what he's not good at yet. And that's a guy that whoever takes him, they're probably going to throw him right into the G League as soon as he gets drafted. I mean, he's still very, very raw. I put him in the top 13, and I'm sure, you know, I've seen some people think he's a top 10 guy. I wouldn't take him in the top 10. I mean, he's one of those guys that if the GM does take him in the top 10, that could get the GM fired. you know, he's a guy that, you know, maybe 4 years or 3 years from now, you take him and you put him in the G League and you work on his game, and then maybe you look like a genius. But it wouldn't shock me if 3 to 4 years from now, you know, he's a guy that we're like, why did he go this high? So, it could go either way. I mean, he can either make somebody look like a genius or he's going to make somebody look like a fool. And that's the danger of a guy like that.
There's always those guys that are tantalizing athletes that haven't quite lived up to their potential with what they look like when you just measure them at a combine or when you just see them running up and down the floor. I read something, I think it was today, maybe a comparison of Marvin Williams from North Carolina, who got picked ahead of Chris Paul and obviously had a 15-year career, was never a star, but carved out a long and successful career. And I think any team that drafts Patrick Williams, if you could end up with Marvin Williams as the comp, I think you'd end up probably feeling pretty good about that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I actually think that's a great comp. The only problem I have with the comp is Marvin Williams as a freshman played like a madman. Patrick Williams didn't play like a madman. He played like a guy that didn't even know at times what he was doing on the court. So that's the only problem I have with that comp. But I do agree, potentially, that is definitely the high side for him, I could see. Absolutely.
Gotcha. All right, let's hit the last three guys that you have listed in your lottery. So we have Kira Lewis, RJ Hampton, and Aaron Nesmith. Hampton obviously was a guy who skipped over college basketball, went and played overseas in New Zealand, taking that route that I think a lot of guys who just decided, hey, we're not going to mess around with college basketball. And now you have the new G League route potentially for guys to go. So it's going to get even more interesting for NBA GMs. But just talk quickly about each one of those prospects. Just give us maybe your one sentence synopsis on each of those guys.
Yeah, Hampton, I really like what I'm seeing from him. I liked what I saw from him in Australia. His workouts have been great. I mean, again, they're always going to be great when they film them and share them. But, you know, what I've seen, you know, he definitely he's putting it all together. I really like him. He's a guy that maybe in a few years we look back and we say, like we did with Kobe Bryant in 96, and we say, man, why did he go 12th? Yeah. And the reason is he's an unknown. So, I mean, maybe that works for him. Kira Lewis, I actually have him as my third point guard prospect. I actually have him over Tyrese Halliburton. I just like his upside. I like his size. There's just a lot to him. I think he's one of the better players in this draft, kind of a sleeper. Definitely a guy that, you know, I might see a team take him earlier than I even have him. Just depends on who loves him. But
you got a smart team taking him in San Antonio, so that's not surprising.
Right, of course, you know. And then Aaron Nesmith, I mean, you know, Boston continues to be Boston. I mean, Aaron Nesmith is an incredible jump shooter. Might be the best jump shooter in the entire draft from the three-point line. You know, got injured, didn't play a full season. But, I mean, in terms of being a shooter, he's probably the best shooter in the entire draft.
Well, Boston could definitely use another guy out on the wing that could shoot it. In addition, I know they're in the market for trying to find maybe some size to have to deal with Bam Adebayo going forward and deal with the Giannis and Brooke Lopez with Milwaukee and deal with Embiid and all those kinds of things. But certainly you can never have enough shooting in today's league. There's no doubt about that. And Boston – with their four, I'm sorry, with their three first round picks. It'll be interesting to see what they do. I know that they're probably trying to be pretty active in the trade market to see if they can't move up and maybe target somebody a little bit higher in the draft. When you have, again, when you have those assets, as you said earlier, you want to be able to use that draft capital to be able to maximize what you can do with your roster. So it'll be interesting to see. I clearly, I don't think Boston's going to make three picks here and bring three rookies onto their roster coming up on December 1st when training camp opens. I got to believe they're going to do something with one of those picks.
No, I totally agree. I would not be shocked if they trade one and probably take one of their picks and turn it into a foreign player and sit on that foreign player for a couple years. I think that's probably the move that they'll make.
Gotcha. All right. So we're going beyond the lottery now. So let's frame the question this way. Give me one guy you think is going to go somewhere beyond the lottery in the first round that you think has a chance to have one of the 10 best NBA careers in this draft. And then a guy that's in the second round that you think is going to be a potential guy that could eventually be a starter on a good team. So who's your favorite late first round pick guy and who's your favorite second round guy that you think can make it in the league?
That's a tough one. Whew. There's a couple good guys. I mean, I would say probably the guy with the highest upside that's not going lottery. There's two of them, but one of them would definitely be Tyrese Maxey from Kentucky. Just scores in bunches, still learning the game, still incredibly raw, but has a really good feel for the game. IQ needs a little bit of a tune-up, but, I mean, he does a lot of things that you just can't teach. He's a natural-born scorer, so I wouldn't be shocked if he becomes one of the top 10 players in this draft. And of course, the other guy that I have that wouldn't shock me if he's a top 10 is Alexei Pochezgi.
The 7-footer.
Yeah. I saw about three games of his, and man, he can move. He can really move for his size. Great facing up the game. I mean, he has no back to the basket game. He's as face up as you can be. And is it just one of these things where you like him because that's where the league is going, or are you trying to find the next, Porzingis? It's weird because if you follow draft history, the danger is always trying to find the guy that is close to the guy that succeeds in the NBA. It's always you don't want to follow behind that most of the time because most of the time you get it wrong.
You're taking Dragan Bender or Nikolai Skidishvili, right? Trying to get the next Nowitzki.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's like while you love the model that he represents, there's a lot to that not like. I mean, number one, he played in the second division of Greece. Number two, he's still filling out his body. And as he fills out his body, he could lose some of that athleticism. And, number three, you just don't know realistically where he is as a basketball player because, he's usually the best player on the court because he's usually the tallest guy on the court. So, it's an interesting mix there with those two guys. But, yeah, that's why I have Maxey one and I have him two.
Okay, what about a second rounder?
Second round is a guy that is not getting any love right now, but I really believe in his talent long term, and that would be Josh Hall. He's out of high school. He's one of the guys that went to prep school at Morvan Prep in North Carolina, and he committed to NC State. And just like Jalen LeCue did, I think last year, he was all set to go to North Carolina State and then decided he wanted to go pro. Well, Jalen LeCue didn't get drafted. And based on how Jalen LeCue has been coming along, I think a lot of teams wish they would have took a flyer on him in the second round. Phoenix actually signed him to a 4-year deal. And I think Josh Hall is one of those guys that, this guy is, I think he's 6'8", incredibly long, well put together, athletic, got a jump shot, can handle the ball. He's a late bloomer. He's a guy that wasn't an elite prospect right from the jump. He kind of worked his way through his career. Actually started his career on Oak Hill Academy's second team. He wasn't even on their first team, which is, you still got to be an incredible player to even be on the second team. But I'm illustrating the point that he was not looked at as a blue chip prospect until his junior year of high school. So, you know, he's a late bloomer, and he's a guy that if you're in that late second round, why not? If you're going to take a flyer on a guy, you might as well take a flyer on a guy that has loads of potential and you know, is still really putting together his game and has a lot left in the tank.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in the second round, you should probably be shooting for the stars, for lack of a better way of saying it. Take some flyers and see if you can't find a guy that ends up clearly outperforming his draft stock and where people thought of him in his draft class. And if you can find one of those guys, and I think you look at all the really successful teams, and maybe it's not as prevalent as it was in the past, but a lot of times teams that have success end up finding that one guy late in the first round or in the second round that ends up being probably not their best player, but ends up being guy four or five on a really good championship team. And the teams that do that well, the teams that scout well in the back end of the first round and the second round, those teams end up usually being pretty successful, because when you can find a guy who's kind of a diamond in the rough, it just helps you with your team building for sure, because you don't have to go out and then try to sign guys to fill those roles. You already have them kind of developed in-house, and that to me is a huge advantage. If you can find a guy that's going to actually contribute in an 8-man playoff rotation, you get a guy like that in the late first round or the second round, and you've really done something. I want to ask you about two more guys before we wrap up, two guys who have kind of been on the radar for a long time, and just get your opinion on them. First one is Cole Anthony, who going into his freshman year of college at North Carolina was pretty much the consensus number one player in that high school class, and was the MVP of a lot of the All-Star games. It just seemed like he was a guy that was destined to be a very, very high draft pick in the NBA. His dad, obviously, Greg Anthony, played in the NBA. So he's got the good bloodlines and genetics that always help. So tell us a little bit about your take on Cole Anthony and what you think he is and will be in the NBA.
Yeah, it's funny. I was actually one of the guys that rated Cole Anthony a little lower coming out of high school. He had some warning signs. Athletically, I was worried about him a little bit. And it's funny, you know, when people say like, Matt, I mean, this guy's throwing down dunks and he's faster than most guys on the floor. Why are you talking about athletically? And the reason is because when these guys go to the next level, and I always tell guys, you got to understand, Cole Anthony is an elite athlete. You put him out with most people, he's an elite athlete. The problem is when he's going into the NBA, he's going against uber athletes. So it's a whole nother level up. And Cole Anthony struggled at times to get to the rack at North Carolina. His jump shot really seemed to abandon him. And really, he didn't have that leadership quality that I think a lot of teams thought he had when he was at Oak Hill Academy. And I think a lot of people thought he's going to be able to take North Carolina, put them on his back, and carry them into a 20-win season. And when that didn't happen, it definitely soured people, for lack of a better word. I mean, they were like, wait a minute, this isn't the same kid I remember. And, you know, fair or unfair, when you're an elite prospect, when your dad is Greg Anthony, when you're a blue chip athlete and you're projected as the best point guard in your class, there are going to be expectations when you go to a college. And he didn't hit those expectations. And I think that's why, out of all the prospects, he's the one that's fallen the farthest. Because to your point, earlier mock drafts this year had him going top five. I don't think he'll be in the top 15. So, you know, he definitely suffered for failing to live up to expectations. And right now he's got to do a redemption tour. He's got to show people that the belief in what he was as a leader and as a point guard was true coming out of high school. But he didn't show it at North Carolina, and I think that was what's caused his stock to plummet.
What do you think? What do you think his NBA career looks like?
I think his NBA career, I think he's going to be a guy like Tyus Jones.
Okay.
You know, a guy that comes in, gives you some good relief. Not an elite player, but, you know, a quality point guard.
So a guy who could be maybe a backup on a good team and maybe a starter on a non-playoff team.
Yeah, and look, he could very obviously work himself into being a full-time NBA starter.
For sure.
But you know, it's just what he showed at North Carolina just didn't have that look. So gotcha. Maybe he gets it back. Maybe he struggled when he had his injury. You know, it all remains to be seen. But I just know, you know, among all the point guards that we've talked about today, you know, LaMelo Ball, Kyra Lewis, Tyrese Halliburton – you know, he's not in that category with those guys right now. And that's definitely, you know, a problem for him.
All right. The other guy that's kind of been on the national radar for a long time, who you have going number 29 to the Toronto Raptors, Nico Mannion, kind of a unique player with, again, a father who played basketball at a high level, Pace Mannion, who played at Utah. And I think Pace Mannion maybe got a cup of coffee in the NBA. But Mannion's kind of been on the radar since he was in ninth grade, throwing down dunks and doing all kinds of things. So goes to Arizona. Now he's coming out. Just tell me a little bit about what you think his pro potential is.
Obviously, he's actually – it's very interesting what's happened with Nico in terms of his draft stock because, you know, he didn't really have a bad freshman year. I mean, we talked about Cole Anthony and the inability to keep up with the prep resume, but Nico Mannion didn't really have a bad year. He was a quality player, and you know, he performed very good for his first year in college. I think the issue with Nico is there are teams that wonder, okay, can he get separation from guys? I mean, in college, when you look at the tape, there are a lot of times where guys are right behind him or riding his hip into the lane. And there's a little worry like, okay, is he going to be able to get past the guys at the NBA level? And is he going to be able to create consistently offensively? And I think that's what's drove his stock down. But I mean, in terms of a long-term prospect, I think he's the type of kid that he'll have a 10-12 year NBA career with no question. I mean, he's got a huge IQ. Does a lot of the things you like, hustles, always plays with a chip on his shoulder for the most part. And I think the world of him. I think he's just got some question marks about how he can perform at the next level.
Well, I think that what you just described is one of the things that when I think about guys that I like both in this draft and in any other draft, when you hear that a guy has a great work ethic and that he has a high IQ, to me, those are two things that are translatable to the next level. And if you're willing to work and you're smart, and obviously there's a certain level of talent and athleticism that you have to even be in this position to be able to get drafted. But you combine that with some of those intangible things. To me, those are the kinds of guys that really end up making a difference and ended up having great careers. You think about Giannis and him going 15 in the draft, and you look back at what he looked like as a rookie, and you looked at his body, and then you look at what he looks like now, and clearly he's a guy who just went to work and decided that he wanted to be great, and clearly he had a ton of talent behind that. But I think when you have somebody that's putting in time and has the work ethic, that's when you're going to end up with a player who maybe outperforms the spot where he was drafted. And I think that's obviously ideally what every NBA organization is hoping for, is that they can find a guy who, man, this guy, not only did we pick him number four, but he improved and got better and he performed like a number two pick or a number one pick, whatever it might be, and just kind of outperforms their draft stock. So we've kind of gone through the whole thing now, Matt. I want to give you one final question, and that is, if you're looking at this draft and you start thinking about what could happen on draft night, is there one trade out there that you've heard about, you've thought about, that you think makes sense, that has a high probability of happening? Is there anything out there that you think is going to happen that you think will be fun if it happened?
Yeah, Golden State. I can see Golden State packaging that number two pick and maybe trying to get some pieces. And you know, people have to remember, too, Golden State is also, and I know much to the chagrin of the NBA people, they're going to be in the running for Giannis. So yeah. I don't know how much they want to be on the hook for a number two pick salary cap-wise. So, you know, there's so many layers to this, but I could very easily see them, you know, maybe trading that pick, getting some guys that are going to be off their cap in 1 year, just so they can free up money for Giannis. And look, who knows? Maybe somehow they convince Milwaukee to trade Giannis to him. I doubt it.
They also have that Minnesota number one pick next year.
Right.
So depending on what Minnesota does with the number one pick and how that turns out and what Minnesota's season looks like this year, that pick could become pretty valuable as well. And so maybe you package this year's number two, which is a known commodity, at least in terms of where it's slotted, you package that Minnesota, whatever it is, 2021 pick, and who knows what else you have to throw in there, and maybe you can entice somebody to trade you. I don't know if they can get Giannis for that. I think it would take a lot more than that, but maybe they can entice somebody out there to trade a quality veteran that could help them to, you know, to win a title. I think they're trying to thread that needle of figuring out, okay, what do we need to be able to contend for a title while we still have Steph and Clay in their, at least the tail end of their prime, versus at some point here in the next couple of years, those two guys are going to start to decline. If you make these two picks, if they just sit on these two draft picks, you're going to get what you think should be two quality players in the next two drafts that theoretically you could kind of build the next iteration of your team around, and you'd hope that they're talented enough that they could contribute to what you want to do in terms of trying to win a title in the moment. So it'll be interesting to see how they approach it and what they end up doing, or whether they trade out of that pick or whether they end up making the pick, and then if they do make it, who they end up taking. So it should be a very, very interesting draft night. Let's put it that way.
Oh, for sure. I can't wait. I mean, I know it's been a long time coming, but November 18th can't get here fast enough just so we can put 2020 behind us, and hopefully 2021 is a much better year.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I've read, it sounds like, and I don't know how much you've looked ahead to the 2021 class, but it sounds like from things that I've read and been hearing that 2021 class, people expect that group to be, you know, there might be five or six guys in that class that potentially, if they were in this draft, might, you know, might go ahead of everybody, you know, from Edwards, Wiseman, Ball, that there's five or six prospects that might potentially be the best prospect if they were in this draft.
Oh, no, totally. You know, this draft is going to have a lot of guys that I think are going to be quality players, but I don't see a maybe one or two franchise talents in this draft. But you never know. I mean, look, it could be one of the best drafts, or it could be one of the worst drafts. I mean, every year we sit around and we think like this draft class is terrible. And then you end up looking back and you're like, well, that draft class was actually pretty good. So I think it doesn't have the sexiness of the past drafts. That's for sure. And that was the whole point of my LaMelo Ball, you know, point of view, is I think in a reasonably strong draft, I don't think LaMelo Ball would even be discussed as a top three pick.
Yeah, I would say not. It doesn't seem like, from everything that I've seen and from everything that I've read and from experts that I follow, that any of these guys is a surefire, this guy is going to be a 10-time All-Star. It doesn't seem like there's anybody in this draft that fits that bill. And yet, at the same time, we all know that there's a good chance that somewhere in the top 15, there's probably a guy that's going to be a multi-time All-Star that's going to end up being the best player on a very good team at some point in their NBA career. The question is, who is that player? And so often it ends up not being the player that we think it is. And so it will be very, very interesting to see how this all plays out. And again, just like everyone else, all of us are ready to move on from this particular class and get ready to get them actually out on the floor and see what they can do as NBA players. And it'll be a very, very quick turnaround for the league. Clearly, there's some issues that they're going to have to work through with COVID and figuring out how they keep everybody healthy when they're not in a bubble. And there's a lot of challenges ahead of the league, but it's an exciting time. It should be a lot of fun to see what happens over the next 3 weeks with the draft and free agency and trades and all that. And then when training camp starts, whew, everything will be ready to go and get these teams back out on the floor, especially the ones that haven't played for a long time since last March, and looking forward to seeing those teams get back out on the floor. And who knows what's going to happen with the Lakers and Heat and how much load management those teams are going to do to keep those guys rested. But at any rate, Matt, can't thank you enough for jumping on with us tonight. It was a lot of fun to talk NBA draft with you and kind of dish around some of the things that could potentially happen on November 18th. And to everyone out there, we appreciate you listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. If you have an existing podcast or are looking to launch your own pod but aren't sure where to start, the team at My Podcast Manager can help. Our podcast team works behind the scenes so you can do what you do best. We'll help you launch your podcast, make it sound great, and free up your time for the more enjoyable parts of podcasting. If you're ready to put your podcast editing, production, and promotion on autopilot with a trusted team of podcasting professionals, visit mypodcastmanager.com to get started.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.